Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of Rick Wolf's Sports Edge. I am your host, Rick Wolf. Well, if I have some time later on in the hour, I want to talk a little bit about the impact of legalized gambling and how that will be seen from the viewpoint of sports parents and, of course, youth and amateur coaches. Clearly, this is a development that's going to shape the way in which we raise our kids in sports and how they need to be educated about gambling. But first up, over the course of my doing the show over many years, I've assembled a pretty substantial library of books on sports in this country. Many of these works are written by dedicated individuals who share my passion and concern for what's happened to kids in sports. And many of these books are excellent. The problem is, unfortunately, I just don't have enough time on the radio show to get a chance to talk about all the books. In fact, in many cases, I just tried to read them, and if I can, post a review on AskCoachWolf.com. But every so often, a book comes to me that is so different that I feel compelled to talk about it on the show. And that's the case this morning. And once I tell you the title of the book and you hear me chuckling, you'll get a better idea of why I was intrigued. In short, it's a memoir by one of the most successful high school coaches and athletic directors in New York State history. Hank Roth spent several decades as an educator and coach in Westchester County, and his teams won all sorts of league and sectional championships in baseball and basketball during his 47-year span. Hank's been honored as the New York State Athletic Director of the Year, and just last year, he was inducted into the New York Sports Hall of Fame as a coach and athletic administrator. Now, Hank is now retired, but his memoir of coaching high school kids and dealing with parents is an absolute hoot. It's called Hemorrhoids at Halftime, An Insider's View of High School Athletics. And Hank joins me this morning. Hank, first and foremost, it's a pleasure to talk with you. When I first received your book, I had no idea about this title, but as I went through it, it all began to make sense to me, Hank.
Well, thank you very much, Rick, and thanks for having me on the show.
Well, of course. As I said just a second ago, you have pretty much seen it all in your career as a coach and as an athletic director. In other words, you've seen how things have changed a long time ago, a generation ago, to where we are today with kids in sports. But before we get into the various things and how they've changed and how you had to confront and deal with these issues, I have to ask, of course, as I'm sure my listeners are curious as well, how this title, Hemorrhoids at Halftime, I guess as delicately as possible, can you explain how that story came about?
Well, as I approach retirement, having spent, this is more than 50 years in the profession, including 31 years as a head coach and 47 years as an AD, which you mentioned, I thought I had a lot of stories to tell, some of them rather bizarre. So I decided to incorporate those stories into the various chapters in the book on the athlete, the coach, the AD, the parents, the officials. So as I'm relating some of these stories to my good friend Steve Price, who's written a number of books, when I came to the one about the football official and the hemorrhoid attack, he said, "I think you have a title for your book, Hemorrhoids at Halftime." I said, "Yeah, okay, that sounds good. Let's go with that." So I guess you want to hear.
Yeah, I'm afraid I have to ask because it just you can't leave us hanging there. For the benefit of the listeners who have not had a chance to read the book yet, you got to say, tell what happened as politely as possible.
Okay. Well, it's a high school football game on a Saturday afternoon at Woodlands High School. I think it was in the late 70s or early 80s, and one of the veteran officials came up to me before the start of the game, and he said, "Listen, Hank, I just have to tell you, I may not be moving too well today because my hemorrhoids are killing me." And I said, "Okay, well, thanks very much for sharing that with me." Well, around the end of the second quarter, I hear this guttural groan, and the official comes hobbling off the field and says, "Hank, I can't continue." He says, "My hemorrhoids are killing me." I says, "Is there a doctor, that can help me?" So I tell the doctor to take him over to the equipment shed, behind the far goalpost, where we keep all of our field equipment. And so there he goes. And now the end of the first half comes to a close, and I hear this roar of the crowd, and I'm looking at the field. There's nothing happening on the field, so what's this all about? Well, the door to the equipment shed came open, and there's the official on his knees with his pants and his underwear down at his ankles and with his cheeks spread apart, and the doctor's on his knees with a flashlight checking him out. I was absolutely mortified. So anyway, I had parents coming up to me, high-fiving me. He said, Roth, he says, I've been to the Super Bowl and the Orange Bowl. Best halftime entertainment I've ever seen. Another guy said, boy, that's creative, mooning the community. Good job, you know. So that's really the genesis or the origin of the...
Well, as the expression goes, you know, you can't make this stuff up. And,
right.
You know, obviously a true story.
I mean, you're not that creative that you can make something like this up.
I mean, and you know, as I said, you know, a few minutes ago, Hank, you know, I get a lot of people have sent me books they've written or whatever, articles, I really put together a fairly lengthy library. But, you know, most of the titles are pretty, you know, straightforward about sports parenting or athletics today. But hemorrhoids at halftime caught my eye for sure.
Yeah.
And as I'm going through your book, I'm thinking, well, Hank's, you know, very serious about what's happening in terms of how sports have changed and the how you know, we have helicopter parents now and the pressures they put on ADs and high school coaches and whatever. But it's all interspersed with these real-life stories that you've had to encounter over the years as an athletic administrator and an AD. And it's a very, very entertaining read.
Yeah, thank you.
And you know, friends, I want to tell you, by the way, this book, Hemorrhoids at Halftime, An Insider's View of High School Athletics, you can go and get a copy, obviously, at Amazon or BNN.com or just go to your local Barnes & Noble store. But, Hank, let me move on with this. You know, these days, being athletic director means having to find and hire qualified coaches pretty much each year. I assume over the years you've done a lot of this, and I'm sure you probably get plenty of resumes for the so-called more glamorous jobs like a head football coach or a head varsity basketball coach. But how tough is it for an AD to find, I don't know, field hockey coaches for the JV or a coach for the wrestling team?
Well, I think finding coaches for the modified teams and oftentimes for the JV coach can be very difficult. Because as you say, if you're looking for a head football, basketball, baseball coach, you'll probably have a goodly number of candidates from which to choose. But what's interesting, I think, is that just to give you a little historical perspective, when I started as an athletic director back in the early 70s, I would say that nearly 100% of the coaches came from the teaching ranks, you know, in the school district.
Mm-hmm.
And that was great because they have the ability, if necessary, to interact with the student athletes, with the teachers, with the school nurse during the course of the day, whereas the outside coach comes in and they're hitting the field or the gym, you know, at 3 o'clock. Then Title IX came into fruition, you know, shortly thereafter. And even then, it wasn't that difficult, you know, to find coaches from the teaching rank, because a lot of times the boys' varsity soccer coach would coach the girls' team, likewise with the boys' swimming coach the girls' team, because they were in different seasons, same
sure,
with the tennis
right.
coach. But as time went on and a lot of the veteran coaches retired, there was a greater need, you know, to find coaches, especially since when the girls' program came into fruition. I mean, your athletic program almost doubled overnight. So the state then decided to set up a certification program for laymen who were interested in coaching, and it involved three mandated courses mandated by the state. I taught one of those for about 16 years, but then coaches had to be certified in CPR, first aid. Had to be fingerprinted. Now they have to take courses in child abuse and violence prevention. I mean, those can be taken online, but it incurs an expense, you know, to a lot of those prospective coaches. And some of them choose to coach a little league team or a travel team or a ASO soccer team because they don't have to go through the certification process. So it creates a dearth of of coaches in a lot of those sports, particularly at the modified and the JV level, you know, as you mentioned.
Yeah, it's one thing you just said, this is one of those changes that's taken place over the years. You know, a lot of, as you say, people who love to involve in getting in high school coaching, but once they confront the fact that, well, I need to get be trained or certified in CPR and first aid and get myself fingerprinted for a background check. You know, all these things are paid for, not by the school, they're paid by the individual.
Correct.
And then people say, well, you know, then I'll just go and I'll volunteer, as you say, either in my local community or I'll just go put out a shingle and put up my own travel team or, mm-hmm. or club team. I don't have to go through that stuff. And I think that's all part of this process. And, of course, the end result, Hank, is that it makes more and more difficult, to find, quality coaches who do have the time to want to go out. They may not be, you know, teachers at the school district, but coaches want to work, you know, and work with kids in high school.
It isn't uncommon, by the way, you know, prior to the start of any of the seasons that athletic directors will go online and post their vacancies. And it's not unusual to find 25 schools who are looking for coaches, sometimes multiple coaches. And even through all their best efforts of contacting local colleges, talking to other athletic directors, posting position in your school, posting position, you know, with the Interscholastic Athletics Office, you come up maybe, if you're lucky, with one candidate, and maybe that candidate isn't the most experienced and may not also have the greatest expertise, but you're stuck. So what are you going to do? You're not going to drop the program.
No.
So. And actually, in my last year as an athletic director, I took on the assignment of coaching the girls' JV tennis team because I couldn't find anybody else. And interestingly enough, I just learned, you know, the other day that one of our athletic directors in one of the more affluent school districts in the county is coaching the girls' varsity lacrosse team because he couldn't find anybody else.
Yeah, I think that's becoming more and more the norm, and that is a concern, and it all sort of feeds into the problems we have today where parents are saying, well, there's not a – if the school doesn't have a real dedicated lacrosse coach or coach for that particular sport, I'll take my kid and put him on a club team. All right, let me take a timeout. We're talking this morning with Hank Roth, longtime varsity coach, very successful, and athletic director in Westchester County, author of a new book called Hemorrhoids at Halftime. When I come back from Dave Uram's update, we'll, of course, take your calls at 1-877-337-6666. That's brought to you by Mohegan Sun. Unlimited possibilities await you at Mohegan Sun. Plan your stay at MohiganSun.com.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
And welcome back to the Sports Edge, everyone. I am Rick Wolf. My guest this morning is Hank Roth. He is the author of a new book, very funny book, called Hemorrhoids at Halftime, an Insider's View of high school athletics. And yes, we're taking your calls at 1-877-337-6666. Hank, you know, I am, as I said, I've been around high school sports and college and pro sports for a long time, and I thought I had heard it all. But, you know, the one of the stories in the book you relate is about a pitcher. a pitcher who was obviously angry and frustrated and disappointed, and he was being taken out of the game. And these stories are true in the book. So tell our listeners what happened with this kid in high school game.
Well, actually, I was having lunch with an athletic director a couple of weeks ago. Who, before he came, the athletic director, he coached baseball in Dutchess County. So he's telling me the story about removing a pitcher who he was wild, he was getting knocked around. So we went out to the mound and told the kid he was taking him out of the game. The kid was incensed, and coach said, well, you know, you're coming out. The kid took off his hat, threw it on the ground, began to undress, took off his jersey, took off his pants, stepped out of his shoes, and basically walked off the mound in his underwear. And at the same time, cursed out the coach in the most profane manner.
Yeah.
But then he comes back the next day, and he wanted to know if he's still on the team. I mean, you can't make that up.
you know, as I said, we've all seen unusual things happen in sports, but, I mean, that kind of stuff, that's just unbelievable. And yet, that's how you know, these things, happen these days. A kid gets angry and frustrated, and cools off the night after that night, goes back and says, "Oh, I was just angry, but I'm fine now."
Yeah.
Oh God! All right, let's go to our callers. Let's go with our friend Mike out in East Rockaway. Hey, Mike. Good morning.
Hey, Ross, Rick. I'm still laughing. Hank, nice to speak to you.
Nice to speak to you too.
And Rick, as you know, I tune into your show every Sunday.
Of course.
It is so funny. It goes from Harvard boys to hemorrhoids at halftime. And I mentioned to you, Rick, a few times. You know, I have a son who just graduated college last year, a good school upstate, academic, was a wide receiver. My daughter played sports, fast-paced softball. I played a little ball back in the day, my brothers, whatever. And you can't make this stuff up. I even mentioned to you a few times, I should write a book on the parents in the ball fields.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
This, Hank, is too much. And you talk about a pitcher getting dressed down on the mound.
Yeah.
Oh, literally, but it's got to be a read. I will turn the page and read it, Hank. But good
thank
stuff.
You. Thank you.
Truth is stranger than fiction. And I'll leave you with this. I used to tell my dad, rest his soul, years ago, when he watched us play, when we were kids and his grandkids, I said, "Dad, the faces may change, but the stuff stays the same with some parents and other things that happen." But now I can sip my coffee and stop laughing for a while and listen to you.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the call.
Thank you, Mike.
You know, Hank, I have to ask you, because I think that as you look under the microscope of the ongoing concerns, or if you will, friction these days between parents and coaches, and obviously the ADs watching all of this stuff, you know, another concern here is that I don't think the parents on the sidelines understand the relationship that the high school coaches have with the officials, the referees, the umpires who work the games. It's not adversarial. I mean, the coaches understand it's a tough job to officiate or to umpire high school games, and I'd like to get your thoughts about that, because I think it'd be very enlightening for parents, sports parents, to hear that.
Well, for one thing, if the coach establishes an adversary relationship with officials, I mean that's a mistake. I mean that's counterproductive. Most officials will allow coaches to bark a little bit, you know, if they feel they've missed a call. As long as they don't get personal and abusive. You know, you can enjoy a good relationship with the officials. Now, there was a time when I was coaching basketball and umpiring baseball, so I had it, you know, from both sides. But it's important, I think, to know that the officials are out there doing the best job they can, and they're going to make mistakes, just like coaches make mistakes, just like athletes make mistakes. And you can't dwell on it, you know, too much. So parents who get a little bit overzealous and out of control are not doing the program really any good at all. You know, let the coach address, you know, an issue with the officials. They don't need to hear it from the parents in the stand or anybody else in the stand.
I mean, there was a time not long ago before instant replay was put into effect or upon further review, which of course only happens at the professional level these days. But you know, everybody was taught, well, as you just said, that sometimes officials, the human umpires, they make a bad call, but that's part of the game. And if you are an athlete and you let it affect you and your approach, it's just going to be – things are going to spiral out of control.
Exactly.
You have to expect that things might not go your way, but you move on. And I, unfortunately, these days, too many parents on the sidelines, they don't seem to either want to accept that, or they feel that if they begin to verbally abuse – an official or referee, that somehow that's going to influence them, you know, in terms of making other calls. It doesn't work that way.
No, that really doesn't.
And the coach is the same way. As you said, it's been my experience that, you know, the referees, umps, you know, officials, they'll let the coach bark a little bit, but obviously no profanity once you cross that line. And the kids the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kids don't understand, well, why can't I use bad words? Well, if you do that, that's your ticket out of the game.
Yeah, that's you're crossing the line.
But, I mean, my theory is that that's sort of the influence, perhaps, again, of kids who are exposed to travel or club teams, where perhaps there's more leeway when it comes to poor behavior or bad language. But at the high school level, no, you're not going to get away with that stuff. I mean, have you seen that?
Yeah, well, you're right. I think, you know, I think at the high school level, I think as an athletic director, I think what you want to be able to do is provide not only a friendly but a safe environment, not only for the visiting team, the officials as well. Because if there are certain schools, I know there are certain officials, you know, who won't work certain games, you know, at certain schools because they feel have been, you know, verbally abused. They've been followed out to the parking lot to their car. And I mean that just is not good for the sport. It's not good for the school. And
I don't think parents know that it works both ways. Well, you say an official will come to and say, "Nah, I'm not going back to work any games there again." I think that's the crowd is unruly and out of control.
Yeah, well, the officials have that same opportunity that the coaches have. The coaches have a non-preferred list. I mean, if they have. I've had a bad relationship with an official over a period of years, and they don't want to see them again. They can put them on their non-preferred list, and so they won't see them, and they won't see them in sectional play as well. But the officials have the same prerogative. If they're unhappy with a particular coach and don't want to work at a certain school because they feel it's a hostile environment, you know, they also can say, "I don't want to work at that school." And so it works both ways.
You know, it's funny. I was recalling, and by the way, we're talking with Hank Roth, and we're taking calls at 1-877-337-6666, talking about the plight of athletic directors and coaches these days. You know, it's funny, Hank, I just remember some years ago, and I was the head coach at Mercer College Baseball, and there was some sort of bang-bang play in the game, late in the game, and obviously I was angry and upset because a call had gone against my team. And I was going sort of face-to-face with the home plate umpire and trying to watch what I was saying. But at some point I said, you know, I'll make sure you'll never work any of my games ever again. Now, this happened to be during a playoff situation.
I've done that, too.
And, of course, we lost the game. And 24 hours later, we have a new game. And guess what? It's the same umpire. So, fortunately, he understood what I was just angry and upset at the moment. But... yeah, so we shook hands and had a smile on my face. We move on. It was fine. But that's to be expected when it happens in the course of the heat of battle. But it's a little different when you get to the point of making serious threats or using bad language or whatever. So
just a quick story. I had an umpire who I respected greatly and thought he was a good official, but he made a bad play on a bang-bang play at the plate, cost me a game and actually the league championship, so I followed him out to the parking lot and, with a baseball in my hand, and I said, "You see this? This is a baseball. The catcher dropped the ball, and you didn't see it." So I felt stupid. I drove home. I felt badly. I got on the phone. I called him and apologized. He calls me back. You know, about a week later, he said, "I just got a new pair of glasses."
That's funny. Oh my goodness. All right, let's move on. Let's go to Vernon right here in Manhattan. Vernon, good morning. You're on the Fan.
Good morning. How you guys doing?
Good. How are you, Vernon?
Okay, I'll tell you a story. This is a true story. This is me as a kid when I played baseball. This deals with the Police Athletic League. And as kids, we had summer jobs working for the Haru Act. And the thing was we got paid $40 a week. That was our salary.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing was, something happened with one of the PL League teams, and they got kicked out. So to balance it off, they needed another team. So they came to us, our department, and it was a little summer job, not doing much. And they said, "We need a baseball team to step in." So they came and asked our boss, and we were saying, "Well, I love the idea of playing baseball, but some of the kids did not want to play baseball. But they say, 'You're working for us, you're going to play baseball.'" So they gave us uniforms, the PL League, and we went out for the first day to play baseball. They gave us equipment, everything. So we came out there to play baseball, and our manager was named Mackey. That was his name. So all of a sudden, while we're playing baseball, the shortstop starts walking off the field and during the game. And the umpire said, "Time out, time, what's going on?" And the kid said, "Well, I got to go bathroom. I ain't got time to stand out here." So they said, "Vernon, go up there and play shortstop." I said, "I don't know how to play shortstop. Go up there and play shortstop." And so there was a hit in one of the on the other team.
Yeah.
And the guy was running from third to home. So the kid did not know what to do with the baseball who caught it a ground ball. So Mackey said, "The runner, the runner." He's thought, try to throw the baseball at home plate to get the eye out. Kid looking, so what? The runner hit the runner. He threw the baseball, hit the runner in the head. And guess what? That one game, we got kicked out. The whole team played one baseball game, got paid money, and got kicked out. You can't believe this story, but these things are true.
Oh, hey, Vernon.
You guys have a nice day.
Thank you for that. And that's exactly what we're talking about. You can't make these things up, Hank. You know,
I know.
The book, of course, is full of these unbelievable stories that people are going to read and say, I got to read that again. That's just unbelievable.
So, yeah.
I mean, anyhow, look, we're talking this morning with Hank Roth. We're talking about his new book, Hemorrhoids at Halftime, An Insider's View of High School Athletics. We got to take a pause here. When I come back, I'm going to talk to you, Hank, about the role of booster clubs in high school. Talk also about this new development with legalized gambling. And, of course, we'll take your calls and comments at 1-877-337-6666.
TheRadio.com. TheRadio.com.
And, of course, speaking of Aaron Boone and the Yankees, don't forget at 9 o'clock this morning, Ed Randall will be here, and he'll be talking baseball with you. And as always, I ask you to check out my website and my blog at AskCoachWolf.com. In fact, I want to add that now is the time to start booking me for speaking events at your school or your sports group this coming fall, and especially if you want me to come and talk about sports psychology and athletes, and, of course, my new book. All you have to do is just go to AskCoachWolf.com and drop me a line. My guest this morning is Hank Roth, one of the most successful high school coaches and ADs in New York State history. We're talking about his very entertaining and insightful book, Hemorrhoids at Halftime, and, of course, taking a calls at 1-877-337-6666. Hank, I mentioned before for the update, I want to talk for a second about booster clubs, which is something you talk about in your book. You know, booster clubs have been around for a long time. Obviously, they are parental organizations that are not, and I guess it's the best way to say this, they're not affiliated per se with the school. They're there to basically provide support, provide some financial aid for programs at the varsity level. But if you would, there's sort of a, I've heard from coaches and ADs, that sometimes there's a love-hate affair with booster clubs.
Well, I guess it can be. I had the good fortune in both schools, both at Woodlands High School and at Ardsley, to actually starting the boosters program. And when I got to Ardsley, for example, I talked to every head coach, and I said, give me the name of a parent, very supportive, pleasant, easy to work with, because I had a particular philosophy in mind in terms of what the mission statement should be, for the club.
Uh-huh.
I think boosters clubs can provide a valuable support for the athletic program, but I think you have to be careful. For example, I felt that it should be all-inclusive. In other words, the booster club is not just for football or basketball. It's for all the teams, and everybody should feel that they're part of the action.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, homecoming weekend, you have a football game, but we also have a boys' soccer game, girls' soccer game, volleyball game, swim meet, tennis match. In the winter, the Boosters Club sponsors a wrestling tournament and boys and girls basketball tournament, and in the spring, baseball, softball, and lacrosse tournaments. So, and any monies raised, I also didn't want that. I didn't want people to feel that we're in the business of raising money to purchase equipment and supplies, for the athletic program, because I've always felt that the athletic budget was sufficient to accommodate the needs of all the teams. So mm-hmm. any fundraising efforts went for special projects, for example, a sports banquet at a nice restaurant at the end of the year, the Wall of Fame, and money made available to coaches who wanted to apply for a stipend. If they were going to run a clinic and they wanted to bring in a clinician or a guest speaker, it went for that. So I've been very happy with, in both of those schools, how the Boosters Club was established, and I think it worked very well. I did hear, on the other hand, of an athletic director who was hired at the night of a board meeting, and when he went out to his car, he was met by parents who told him which coaches needed to be fired. And to his credit, he said, I'm not doing that. He said, I just got here. I don't know any of these people. He says, and if the focus of the Boosters Club is to, you know, to evaluate coaches, he says, I don't want any part of it.
Yeah, and of course, that's what I hear all the time, that the Booster Club, unfortunately, some of the Booster Clubs sort of take it upon as their role as to become, to dictate to the AD, okay, here's what we want you to do.
Yeah,
and that obviously crosses the line. But the way you just outlined it, and the fact was curious, that you basically had started it at Ardsley High School, the Booster Club. That's interesting stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Hank, my time, of course, I'm looking at the clock here. I do want to really quickly get your thoughts about the impact on legalized gambling, particularly on the high school athlete. What are your thoughts?
Well, I would say this, that every school district, I'm sure, has, and the athletic director, with the participation of the administration, has established a code of behavior.
Yep.
Where the athlete has to sign off on it, the parent has to sign off on it, and it's a list of do's and don'ts. And in the beginning, it was more for the penalties for infractions with regard to smoking, drinking, and drugs. Then, mm-hmm. then hazing became an issue. So that was added, you know, to the. Then was important enhancing drugs, and that was added to it. So I hate to think that gambling now would be something that coaches are going to have to address with their athletes. Does it go on? I have a feeling it probably does, especially in certain communities where there's an intense rivalry between two schools. But I certainly hate to think that any adult is going to approach a high school kid and offer them, you know, money to shave points or do something like that.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that's, once again, it's so difficult for parents and coaches these days to interact in the world of sports. But as you mentioned, so many high schools have codes of conduct, and this is another item to add to that agenda, where coaches are going to have to say, look, to the kids, let me explain about the downfalls and potential evils of gambling. The fact is, most kids today have no idea about the early 1950s mm-hmm. and the point-shaving scandals in college basketball here in the city. They don't know about Boston College in the early 70s with point-shaving. And unfortunately, they're going to ask the same questions all naive kids ask, is, well, what's the problem if we win by 7 points or win by 3 points? As long as we win, what's the difference? Mm-hmm. This is another obligation, if you will, another responsibility that's going to fall upon the shoulders of the coaches to educate these kids about the concerns with gambling.
Right.
And I just think it's something that it's going to have to be addressed. I know everybody's trying to think through how this is going to work, and of course people say, well, gambling happens no matter what. Yeah, but I don't think people have thought through yet how this is going to affect or influence kids coming up to the system mm-hmm. who are going to say, well, what's the difference? If it's legalized, then I should be able to do this and not have to pay any penalty or any consequences.
Well, there should be absolutely no tolerance, penalty, you know, for anything like that when a high school kid is approached. And they need to immediately, if that ever happens, they immediately need to bring it to the attention of the coach and put a stop to it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. It's something that really is of a concern. And again, I know this is all going to have to sort of be settled out in the years to come as this new legislation or this ruling by the Supreme Court is thought through by educators and administrators. It is a concern, and I think something to be aware of. All right, Hank, let me just remind my friends and listening audience, your book is a delightful read. It's got the unforgettable title of Hemorrhoids at Halftime, An Insider's View of High School Athletics. It is a terrific read. And I guess it's not only humorous and entertaining, but as I mentioned, it deals with the serious aspects of how athletics in high school have changed over the years. And Hank, I just want to thank you again for being on my show this morning and taking time to share your thoughts and stories with us.
Well, thank you, Rick. I really appreciate you having me on the show.
Thank you, Hank. Okay, that's our friend Hank Roth talking about his new book. Let me take a time out. I'll have more. Stay with me.
Radio.com.
Let me see if I can squeeze in one more call. Let me go to Steve in Manhattan. Steve, good morning. You're on the fan.
All right, Rick. You want me to throw it to the 2020?
go ahead, Steve. What do you got?
Right. The thing with, you know, high school sports, we know it's a mixed bag all around the country.
Yes.
It goes from neighborhood to neighborhood. But New York City, I noticed, I mean, it's more of a trend towards soccer. The kids all want to be basketball stars. Even football and baseball sort of linger on the sidelines as we, you know, we move deeper into the 21st century. It's a neighborhood thing if you look at it closely.
Well, you know, there was a time you mentioned about basketball. And, of course, back in the day, basketball was the New York City game. And of course, basketball's popularity is spread all over the country. But clearly, it all starts with local community and grassroots situations. And, you know, it is a big country and a lot of neighborhoods, a lot of communities. And every area seems to find its own way when it comes to sports. You know, soccer has become very popular. But, of course, soccer still really hasn't cracked the top four yet. But again, if you talk to kids in their teens and 20s, they'll tell you soccer is more exciting than other sports. It really depends, you know, where you live and where you grow up. And that's how, you know, sports are. It's really a function of the kids. And Steve, thanks for the call. It's really a function of the kids and what they enjoy playing the most. And it does change. It does evolve. It does, you know, basically go through its own sort of growth cycle no matter where you are. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about my conversation this morning with Hank Roth and you know, how the things have changed in terms of the parental relationship with high school coaches. And, you know, for years and years and years, there was more of a sense of just respect and of a commonality. But now, as you know, too many parents are getting so involved. I was just reading the other day about a high school coach upstate who felt that the parents in his town, his community, were trying to get the school board to fire the coach, and they wrote some rather nasty letters to the school board, which said, okay, well, we'll cave in and we'll fire this coach. Well, the coach fought back and sued those parents for defamation. I just read where he won $50,000 fighting back against the parents who wrote some nasty things about verbal abuse and an alcohol problem, which were not true. And, of course, maybe this is the start of a new wave of what's going to happen with high school sports, fighting back against parents who do meddle and interfere and intervene. You know, that's troubling as well. It's just a different time, a different age when it comes to high school sports in this country. And as Hank and I were saying early on, you know, it's like the booster clubs. You know, the booster clubs were supposed to be there to help enhance and be there to help add any way they can to keep the high school sports programs thriving and doing well in a sense of appreciation. But they're not there to basically influence the athletic director or school board as to which coaches should be let go or dismissed. That's going off the deep end. So, in effect, what we're seeing here is a transitional period in high school sports, and it's hard to get a sense of how this is going to play out, particularly because of the advent of club sports and teams and travel teams and what kind of effect they're having on the kids today. It's concerning. It's troubling. And yet, I don't know if we come to a resolution yet of what's going to happen down the road. Okay. That's going to do it for me. And this is another Sports Edge this morning. My thanks to Connor Green. Please stick around for Ed Randall. He is up next. I'll see you next week right here on the Sports Edge.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.